Wake up, America.
Wake up, America.
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in.
Or don't. Don't call in. That is such bad radio for me, Michael Dean, to say, call in, and then say,
call in.
Don't bother calling in. We're smarter than everybody. We don't want to hear what they have to say. That was some great board op in there. Yeah, this is Michael Dean, and this is the Freedom Fiends, and I'm broadcasting live and worldwide from Bitcoin Boulevard in Buffalo, Wyoming, and on the other end of the tubes, we got Davi Barker. How you doing, Davi?
Excellent. How you doing?
Good. Are you enjoying a Leviticus burger with me?
No, just the coffee.
We weren't going to go there. I like lecturing you today. Like, we can't say things on radio that'll get us kicked up. But you know what? That's more for the weekend show too. You got to understand that too. Like, this is night, you know, you can get away with more at night. And,
yeah, all the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah. All the kids have gone to bed.
It's just us adults here now.
What's a Leviticus burger?
A Leviticus burger is
that's my name for something you told me about.
I said, well, okay, so I just did this as a joke. When I was a kid, or not a kid, a young adult, but I used to go to Denny's a lot to like hang out after, well, to tell you the truth, it was after the Rocky Horror Picture Show. We'd go at like 6 a.m. But I always used to order a bacon cheeseburger with a vegetarian patty, with a Boca patty. Because it would confuse the waitress, because you'd be like, oh, he must be a vegetarian, but there's bacon on it. Does that mean he doesn't want the bacon on it? But then, so either way, no matter what she brought me, I could complain.
It means you want to break as many Old Testament dietary laws as possible, right?
Well, yeah, the dietary law, the reason we started calling this a Leviticus burger is because the kosher law is you can't mix meat and dairy. And so even without the bacon, the cheeseburger still is not Leviticus friendly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's actually a website called God Hates Shellfish. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but I understand.
It's a parody of the site GodHatesFags.com, which may have been a parody too.
Yeah, because it's the same chapter, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the chapter in Leviticus of
and witches and disobedient teenagers.
Yeah,
and somebody ought to make a comprehensive list.
Well, you know, there's a rumor. I've never actually seen him say this, but there's a rumor that old school libertarian Gary North, like, has been quoted as saying that children should be stoned to death for being disobedient. Have you ever heard? And that, you know, homosexual, basically, like, he says anything in Leviticus, you know,
he's one of those Old Testament libertarians,
Old Testament Christian libertarians. Yeah.
I highly doubt that. Is it possible this person was sort of on hiatus and somebody published this in a newsletter under their name?
are you making a Ron Paul reference there?
Yeah.
Well, there's also a rumor that he wrote the Ron Paul newsletters, and there's also a rumor that Lou Rockwell wrote them, but he's denied it.
Yeah, I've heard that rumor.
Yeah. I have another guy I think it might be. Guy I've actually met. God, what's his name? I forget. Anyway.
We ought to offer that. I'll give a Bitcoin to the first person who can come out and prove they wrote that newsletter.
If they can prove they themselves wrote it?
Yeah. If the person who wrote the Ron Paul newsletter comes out, exposes themselves, and gives me definitive proof, I'll give them a Bitcoin.
Have you ever read it? It's really racist.
Oh, yeah. It's incredibly racist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
I'm amazed that Ron Paul has been able to move past that as much as he has.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't really belong to organizations. I don't want to be responsible by proxy for something someone else does. You know, I'm not a joiner. I'm not a pledger. I'm not a party member.
Sure.
Today when I interviewed the BitShares guy, Daniel Larimer, I asked him, you know, he was weird. We have a similar kind of path. Like he was into the Ron Paul thing and then went beyond that to true liberty, to we don't need government liberty. And I said to him, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Libertarian Party? And he didn't get that as like a Joe McCarthy reference. You get it, right?
I get it. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you've seen movies. I mean, neither of us were. I mean, I was probably alive when McCarthy was alive.
That's not just movies. That's archival footage. I mean, that stuff. Pretty sure I've seen him actually say that in his own mouth.
Are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Yeah, they used to like round people up and ask them that. I think now you can't.
And if not, I mean, kids these days, they can watch J. Edgar. Did you watch that?
Yeah, yeah.
With Leonardo DiCaprio. What's
up? Leonardo DiCaprio, like the last 10 movies he's made have all been like great men, you know, famous men with horrible lives, like really depressing. Have you noticed that?
Maybe he's trying to tell us something.
You know, like Gatsby, The Aviator.
I liked it. I don't remember the title, but he played a guy who was a forgery guy.
Oh, Catch Me If You Can. That is a great movie, man. I watched that again with my wife about 3 weeks ago. And then tonight, for some reason, at the end of it, it said, like, those who like this will also like. And so we ordered The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is a weird reverse aging movie with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
It is strange.
I like to call Libertarian Party people lipos. stands for Libertarian and Party Only.
Because they're actually statist or actually ANCAP?
Because they're actually statist, you know. I mean, maybe if they're ANCAPs too, who knows? I mean, but I like the name lipo because, you know, it means they suck.
Yeah, lipo because they suck. No, because they're fat.
We got to cut the fat out of the movement.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a. Do you know about the Red and Black Cafe in Portland, Oregon?
I thought it was in Tahoe, but I have this is the cafe that doesn't allow police officers.
Yeah,
in. Is it
in Tahoe?
I'm not sure. But I know there is an anarchist coffee shop in Tahoe that doesn't let cops.
Yeah, it's ANCOM though, anarcho-communist. It's leftist, red and black, not yellow and black or gold and black. There's a friend of mine had a really hilarious comment on them. They were back in the news today because they did something else, like, you know, threw a cop out or something, and it made the news again. When it first came out, and it was a big news item, and they were getting death threats and all that, and there was an interview with them that was on YouTube. An ANCAP friend of mine saw it and said, "I hate commies, but I hate cops more. Go, commie, go. That's kind of become a meme on the Freedom Fiends. And today, it's a really inside baseball joke. Like today, somebody posted something about them again on Facebook, and some fiend fan posted, "Go, commie, go." And some like newly minted libertarian got really offended. Like, oh, what are you talking about? What? Huh? What?
Right.
I love that when, you know, that's another thing too. Like the Freedom Fiends often have ironic, sarcastic episode titles. And I usually, like, I don't sit down weeks ahead of time and script these things and like come up with the title. No, usually
they come to you in the middle of the episode.
Or they come to me in the middle of the episode. I say, you know, let's call this episode "Killing Brown People Goes Green." Because, you know, the army is using like non-lead bullets or something. And,
right. Environmentally friendly intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Yeah. And then I change it during the editing.
Right.
So I don't really think of them ahead of time, but they're often completely the opposite of what I actually believe. Like, you know, the title will be something like, you know, "Everybody should do whatever the government tells you to all the time." And, you know, some newly minted libertarian probably once a week will see a Freedom Fiends episode on some social network who doesn't get the majesty of the Fiends' bitter old man humor. And they'll go like, "You're stupid. Mises once said that blah, blah." They'll just start.
Right.
It just reminds me of like being the college professor and dealing with new freshmen every day who think they know how the world works.
Well, it's an argument from authority, which is a despicable fallacy for a libertarian to commit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a proximity warning. My cat is circling. He's intrigued by this new mic stand, and so we're going to see if he's going to disturb us.
Oh, you didn't – I guess you didn't read the blog post about that mic where I said keep the foam windscreens away from cats because they love to play with them.
I think I got him under control. He likes being scratched, and that's very distracting.
If you really want to mess with him, you got more than one, right? You got six or five or something?
The foams, yeah.
Yeah. Just take one out of the box and throw it on the ground.
He loves the box that the arm came in. He's been sort of turned it into his own bed. He likes the crinkly paper.
Well, yeah, cats are like two-year-olds. You know, you can get a two-year-old the coolest present in the world, and he's more interested in the packaging and the ribbons.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, who's to say they're not right? Maybe toy stores should be filled with empty boxes.
I have a room in my house filled with empty boxes, and I call it the box room. Literally,
box room?
Yeah, it's a closet in the basement. We are blessed. Well, I guess I could say we're blessed, but I could also say we worked towards this. We left LA 5 years ago, and my wife and I, and we moved to Wyoming. We did a lot of like actuary analysis to figure out where the best place in the country was for us with, you know, lowest land prices, highest standard, you know, like we're basically where you could get a job and live cheap and have a good house cheap. And we got a house that, you know, like our mortgage monthly here is like as much as my, you know, rent was on my studio apartment in San Francisco. And we have like,
oh yeah,
you know, 1800 square feet and a front and backyard.
I grew up in California. So when I hear about property values and I hear about the cost of houses being sold in other states, it's sometimes shocking to me because it is like more than I've paid in rent.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so we, you know, we're a couple living in a house that, you know, it's not a mansion. It's not in a upper class neighborhood. It's kind of a middle class neighborhood, but it's really quiet. We're also like the youngest people on this block. Like I'm 50 and all my neighbors are older and quieter than me. Which is perfect. I love it. And, we have two people and three cats living in an amount of space that, you know, could comfortably hold a family of eight. So, you know, we have like a finished downstairs basement that is nicer and bigger than most apartments I've lived in. That's basically, you know, where we keep, you know, our gymnasium, you know, it's storage. And there's a walk-in closet down there. I used to use it as an audio booth for voiceover. If you look in the Guns and Weed movie, there's a scene of Nima rapping into a really nice microphone in a little vocal booth. It's that room. And it's, you know, we put fabric on the wall. It's underground in a, you know, brick house. It's really quiet. But since I've moved everything upstairs, dealing with a little more noise and a little, but I can look out the window, I've turned that into the box room. So whenever I need a box, I have a box. We'll be back with more important topics than that on the Freedom Fiends with Davi Barker and Michael Dean.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends After Dark with Michael Dean and Davi Barker from shinybadges.com.
How's it going?
Good. Are you watching, you listening to the Vandals song, Anarchy Burger Hold the Government?
I sure am. It's pretty fantastic.
It's not government. It's not government friendly. It's not radio friendly. So
no.
We can't play it. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah.
It also,
I like the logo though. The logo is pretty neat. It's like the V, which I'm assuming stands for Vandals, but you know, for me, V signs mean voluntarism, and it's got a rifle across the front of it.
Yeah,
I like the message. It says peace through vandalism.
Yeah, it's kind of unclear on the concept. Like they actually, you know, the lyrics actually talk about actual vandalism, which, yeah, those kids didn't get it. And you wanted to talk about.
I got a question for you,
Michael. Timothy Leary. Okay, what's your question?
I found there's this thing that's been floating around. It's a handwritten note from Timothy Leary supporting Ron Paul and the Libertarian Party, which I had no idea. Like, I read some Timothy Leary stuff, and he was way too kind of like psychedelic and heady for me to think about politics while I was into him. But I want to know, is Timothy Leary a lipo? Is he a libertarian, or is he a libertarian in party only?
You have to understand that the current brand of voluntarism, do you say voluntarism or voluntarism?
I say voluntarism because there's a Y in the middle of it, but whatever. Yeah. I mean, people say agorism or agorism, whatever.
Well,
regional dialects.
And voluntarism is something different. That's like building houses for Habitat for Humanity. Or, you know, handing out.
I discovered that the original voluntarism, where the word originates from, is medieval philosophers arguing the free will versus determinism thing.
Ah.
And the voluntarists were the ones who believed in free will.
Okay. I definitely believe in free will. I've heard that come up in libertarian conversations recently of determinism. You know, is everything predestined? Absolutely not, man. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't see how it could be, because then there would be no ethics to your choices.
Right, you'd be a robot.
Mm-hmm.
I am a robot. I will not commit sin. Hey, I'm eating a Leviticus burger, man.
The greatest argument against determinism is that the determinists all come to you with their arguments trying to get you to change your position.
They should already know whether you're going to change or not. Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, there's an old joke of like someone goes to a fortune teller, gets their fortune told, and then he runs out without paying, and she's screaming at him, and he's like, well, you must not have been very good, or you would have seen that coming.
Right. Hey, I think you're dodging the question here. Let's get back to Timothy Leary. What do you think?
No, not. I'm speaking in conocentric, parenthetical, hypertextual conversation, and it's okay as long as we always come back to it. And, you know,
I must have been listening on the Third Circuit instead of the Fifth Circuit.
There's always time for Timothy Leary. Timothy Leary, okay, what I was going to say, I was getting there. I was getting there. You haven't heard me rant enough yet to know that it takes me, I go around the bend to get across the street. So Timothy Leary, if he were alive today, he'd probably be a voluntarist anarcho-capitalist. He was doing the best he could with what he had, is what I'm saying. I mean, in the 60s, how many anarcho-capitalists were there? There were like four. They all wore bow ties, and they still wanted to influence politics.
Well, it was Robert Anton Wilson, and he was definitely a contemporary of Timothy Leary.
Yeah, he was one of the weird ones. He was cool. But, you know, most of the people who influenced, you know who influenced you and all of our friends more? Robert Anton Wilson or, you know, Mises? Probably Mises.
For me, it's definitely Robert Anton Wilson.
For me too, man. For me too.
I've read every word that guy's written.
Have you noticed have you heard my one-man band, Right Arm of Wyoming?
No.
Well, actually, I think there's some of it.
Maybe I have.
In the bumper music, yeah. Yeah, okay. Some of this. But the initials for it are RAW, which is for Robert Anton Wilson.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's war backwards, right?
Yeah. He was
Wayne Allen Root versus Robert Anton Wilson. That'd be a heck of a fight.
Who is Wayne Allen Root?
He's one of these lipos racist in the Libertarian Party. Wayne Allen Root was sort of the candidate for the Libertarian Party last year, I think. And so a lot of sort of like real sort of small L libertarians had this like, we are anti-war, and they put periods on W-A and R and said it stood for Wayne Allen Root.
Yeah, you know, the Libertarian Party has always seemed so square to me. And really, if they achieved their true goal, they would disband. Because really, like, their idea is the smallest government possible. And, you know, they've been trying for like 35 years and haven't achieved really any smaller government. And I spoke remotely via teleconferencing at a Libertarian Party event. And half the people there were anarcho-capitalists, man. They were not politically active. So it's getting there. It's going to – they're all becoming voluntarists. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Pains.
Worms.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Davey Barker exploding on the scene, and no, Central Scrutinizer, that's not a Bomb reference. Although that is my band Bomb playing in the background, my old band. That's from a record that was on Warner Brothers. I'm literally violating copyright by using my music on this show, but it's not a problem because I'm not really violating copyright,
What? You're violating your own intellectual property?
Well, yeah.
Isn't that sort of like I broke my own window?
Well, because we sold half the publishing to Warner Brothers. But talk radio stations get shaken down by ASCAP and BMI and are made to pay music royalties even if they don't have music. So it's taken care of. I feel a compulsion to occasionally play some popular music on a radio show because
you're paying for it.
I want the stations brave enough to play us to get their money's worth.
Yeah.
So Timothy Leary, what do you want to know?
Where did we leave off? We left off with is he a libertarian or a libertarian party guy? And you said he was doing the best with the tools that he had, which is, I think, what we said about Hunter S. Thompson last week.
Exactly. Actually, yeah. It's, those cats, if they are around now, as smart as they were, knowing what they knew, I don't think that they'd be backing politicians. Yeah. I think they'd be speaking at Porkfest.
You know why I think it is that you can see it, even though the conclusions they came to and some of the things that they advocated are different than what we might advocate now. I think Robert Anton Wilson really solidified who would sort of end up in a free society and who would not. And he classified them as Homo sapien neophilius and Homo sapien neophobus. And that is people who love and embrace new ideas and people who are afraid of and reject new ideas just because they're new.
Huh.
And, these are new ideas. And there are some people that they frighten because they're new ideas. And there are other people who are like, ooh, a new idea. Let me test this in the laboratory of my brain and see what happens. And, those people sort of come to correct conclusions about things early on.
Yeah. And the youth generally change things, but never without guidance of older people. And Wilson and Leary were some of those older people. And, I'm one of those older people, and you're going to be one of those older people when you grow up someday.
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
When I get old.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to be old. I've always wanted to be old.
Well, talk radio is a good thing to get into if you want to live to be old, because I'm 50 and I'm pretty young for a talk radio host. If you look at who's out there.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe. You can do this until you like die of old age on air at 95.
They can fill you into the studio and hook you up to a microphone.
Yeah, or you can do it from
anywhere. As long as your brain stays active, you'll be all right.
Yeah, if you have a stroke, you're not in a good shape because then you're going to kind of sound like this. But, if you have a stroke, you'd probably also still dictate things and have someone else read them for you on the air. You could write for radio.
That'd be an interesting job to ghost write for a talk radio show.
No, just do your own radio show. Like, if you had a stroke, but you could still type, or you could still talk well enough to commute and your brain was still sharp. You could, what I would do is I would rant.
Hire an actor.
I would just rant and have my wife, type it up and then read it in her beautiful voice. So
yeah.
All right. She's already on here. So people know her voice. It wouldn't seem that strange. They'd probably like it better. Because I just sound like, anyway.
There's some other young guys out there. I think, who else has radio shows that's not that old?
Well, Ian
and
Mark. I
feel like Glenn Beck is not that old.
Glenn Beck's older than me.
Yeah. I guess he is gray now. If you look at pictures of him,
he went gray really quick. So did Obama.
Yeah. Well, I think presidents go gray really fast.
They do, man.
There's those sort of time-lapse photos you can see of presidents when they were elected.
Oh, yeah.
Presidents Bush, when they leave office, and they look like 20 years older.
Yeah, Bush and Reagan both went gray in office.
I think it's because it's such soul-destroying work.
It is. And, I don't want to compliment them by saying, boy, they work hard, but I'd be willing to bet the president of the United States doesn't sleep a lot.
No, probably not, and probably not very well when he does.
How do you sleep at night? I was like the McBain character on The Simpsons. How do you sleep at night? On a pile of money with many beautiful women. That's how Kennedy slept.
I don't know. I think Obama probably sleeps next to an emergency telephone with a twitchy finger on a butt.
Yeah, they always say use the analogy of his finger on the button for people that can order bombs in wars, and I really think it's on Obama's BlackBerry. I think he always has it with him.
There's an app for that.
There's an app for that. Yes, and Liberty. There's an app for that. So Timothy Leary.
Yeah. Back to Timothy Leary.
I read a 500-page book by Timothy Leary when I was 15. It's called High Priest, and it's his autobiography. And somehow that phrase high priest, you know, it's a play on words, like he was high and he was kind of a holy man to a lot of people. But for some reason, the phrase sticks in my head, and like, you know how like something insignificant will maintain significance for no reason your whole life, like a random memory of like waiting at the bus 20 years ago or something.
I don't know what mine would be, but I get the concept.
Yeah, I have a few of those. And one is, for some reason, I call my cats the high beasts of Wyoming. I find it really amusing. My wife laughs at most of my jokes, but she just, that wasn't very funny the first 10 times. And by the 200th time, it's not funny at all. But yeah, that's named after the Timothy Leary book. So
I got one of those memories. They passed out stickers when they were recruiting for the military and I was in high school, and they said, aim high. And so I cut the A off so that it said, I'm high.
Well, I have a memory of the Libertarian Party and thinking they were square the first time I encountered them. I was,
you know, me too.
It was my first day of college. I was 17. I went to college away from home at 17. I was high as hell, tripping on something. I don't know. And I haven't done drugs in 20 years, so I can feel free talking about this. Yeah, I was tripping, and I looked like a hippie. I had a, you know, army jacket. I'd painted psychedelic colors all over, and I was wearing little granny glasses like John Lennon, and I had long blonde hair. And, you know, the Libertarian Party, like, they were wearing suits and ties and had a card table in the student union when I was going to get my ID. And they picked me out. Like, you know how, like, cults will pick out a depressed person, like, oh, you're easy picking? I wasn't depressed. I was obviously high, and they were pro legalizing marijuana, so they picked me out, like, oh, he'll be easy prey. And they started talking to me. It was a young man and young woman. They fresh faced and, you know, looked like the Young Republican Club or something, and they had pamphlets, and they said, we're the Libertarian Party. Like, that was their first thing they said to me, was, we're the Libertarian Party and we're in favor of decriminalizing marijuana. And I took the pamphlet. Yeah, I took the pamphlet and started looking at it. And they were just talking a mile a minute. And I just, like, I was like, this reminds me of church. I'm leaving. You know, it reminded me of like proselytizing door to door kind of people. So
they had nothing to say. I was already a libertarian. And I went to like one of these meet the candidate events where they had like a representative from every party. And I was really excited because they had somebody from Green Party and somebody from Libertarian Party there. So I like enthusiastically ran up to the libertarian table. I'm like, oh my God, other libertarians. And I wanted to have a conversation with them, and they had nothing to say.
Yeah.
Like I kept throwing them softballs about things we could talk about, and they're like, yeah, we have a book about that. it was like throwing a wet blanket on my enthusiasm.
Yeah, you know, if I hadn't met the Libertarian Party when I was 17, I probably would have become a libertarian 20 years before I did.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I was always,
that may be even true for me.
I was always anti-authority and always pro the ideas of liberty, but doing the best I could within what I was given, which was, you know, I voted Democrat, but I was really lazy about it. I didn't care about the issues.
I've had people in my life say that they knew I was a libertarian years before I did. Like, people that I like haven't seen since high school, and they're like, oh, you're a libertarian? Yeah, I knew that. I'm like, what do you mean you knew that? I didn't know that.
Like, yeah, my older sisters didn't say that, but they were like, of course you are. Like, that makes sense. Like, they hadn't considered it before. They didn't know that term would be applied by myself to me at some point, but they were like,
yeah,
of course you are.
Right. It's, I don't know, maybe we're a different species.
Well, you know, I'd never heard that Robert Anton Wilson delineation of the three subspecies of humanity, but I did a blog post about 2 years ago that I thought there were two subspecies, Homo libertitis and Homo parasitis.
Yeah.
And Homo libertitis are people who don't want to be controlled and do want to be left alone. And Homo parasitis are people who want to control or be controlled. And,
right.
You know, I don't really believe that, and I don't like to get too much into that because it sounds like eugenics or something. Like, you know, I'm proposing some sort of cleansing.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying there's no hope for the unviable mutation in the species, right?
Like, but in my experience, like, I literally One of the reasons I left Facebook, there's many reasons. I had 3,500 friends on there 2 years ago, so-called friends. And I walked away from it. And, you know, I think this radio show would be a lot bigger if I hadn't done that. But I don't think it'd be as good because it's such a time suck. But I see less than no point in arguing on the internet with strangers who defend the state like they're defending their mother.
Yeah.
And I really believe, I think that you are either in your heart of hearts, I think you either want liberty or don't. And I don't think you make libertarians by having logical discussions with them. I think you allow them to discover that they've always been one. And I think that people who argue for the state like they're arguing for their mother will never get it, and no amount of logic will work.
Sure. I remember when you left Facebook, you did a kind of experiment where you posted two articles, or maybe it was more than that, and you tried to see which one generated more feedback. Do you remember this?
Yeah. One was a solution and one was complaining, and the complaining got a lot more shares than the solution, and that made me give up on Facebook. That was the final straw.
I did that this week. I posted about 20 examples of police abuse stories, right? Of either beating up little kids or beating up disabled women or whatever. And everyone, my comment was just one bad apple, right? And then the 21st one was a story about Apple. And it was the Apple iPhones have now implemented some sort of system where police can block your recording devices so that you can no longer use Apple phones to record police encounters. And that was the one that got all the likes and all the shares and all the comments. Right. So it's like it just struck me that like the it's like they don't want to talk about the gun in the room. They want to talk about the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. And mine was, the solution was how to use encrypted email. And the complaint was the NSA is reading your emails, and the NSA complaint got more than the solution.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Glenn Beck, paraphrasing Alex Jones. Alex Jones did a whole segment on that, too. It's true. Freedom Fiends. Michael Dean, Davi Barker. Late night. Into your ear hole. It's early where Davi lives. What time is it there? 10?
It is 10:50 right now.
Yeah.
10:52.
You start this show at 10. You know, when we're doing this in at Porkfest, we're going to be done at 3 in the morning. There'll be some interesting people fighting to get on the air at Porkfest at 3 in the morning, I think, probably.
I think that's when the bars open at Porkfest.
So, Timothy Leary, you wanted to know about him.
Yeah.
I knew that I guess you said there's like, you know, a handwritten note going around like it's just been unearthed. But no, he did it very publicly. He did some fundraisers for Ron Paul back in the day.
Really?
They kind of look like each other. You ever notice that? They're both.
I have never noticed that.
They're both old, distinguished, skinny Irish American guys.
Okay.
Yeah,
I could see that.
They both kind of look like
now.
They both kind of look like elves. Yeah.
Maybe it's because they're reptilian.
They're not reptilian. No, the Geico lizard is reptilian.
He does. Wow.
Well, what did I tell you during the break that blew your mind?
I don't remember. I must have blown a gasket.
What Geico stands for?
What Geico stands for? Geico stands for Government Employee Insurance Company. And I didn't believe you, but there, sure enough, there it is.
I have so much useless information that makes people blow their gaskets. Okay, so Timothy Leary, I was really fascinated by him when I was a kid, and not because of that he was he's best known for, you know, being the Pied Piper of LSD in the 60s. And he was so much more than that. He was really a forward thinker. He did a lot about space exploration. He was into home computers before most people were. He realized before there was an internet, he had a computer and he was like, this is going to change the world. People are going to connect these things together and everyone's going to be able to talk to each other in ways they never had before. And he was a really influential guy on me. For some reason, I discovered him when I was about 14. I guess I found that book, High Priest, at the library, and that was back when I read 500-page books. And
well, check this out. I Google image searched Timothy Leary, and sure enough, pictures of Ron Paul come up, which is just weird.
Yeah.
But scroll down a little bit, and pictures of Leonardo DiCaprio come up. So I wonder if there's a Great Man movie in the works of Leonardo DiCaprio playing Timothy Leary.
He should play both of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay, man. That's how we roll here on the Freedom Fiends. Yeah, I read this book and I wanted to go hear Leary speak. He was speaking, he was doing a college lecture tour, and he was speaking at a college about an hour and a half from my house. And I was 15, and some hippies I knew who were like 20 were going, and they offered to take me because they liked me. And they, you know, I used to hang out with like 20-year-olds when I was 15 because I was really smart, and I would say things when they were high that would make them, you know, wow, hey, let's let Michael come along, he'll just talk and entertain us. And yeah, I was basically doing talk radio before, you know, 30 years before
anyone was recording it or broadcasting.
Yeah,
and you were just talking, and someone discovered that there were interesting things coming out of this kid.
Yeah. I was paying my way back then just by yakking. So I wanted to go hear Leary speak, and I asked my dad, and like, he knew who Leary was, and he said, absolutely not. And, you know, I've never forgiven him for that. I still hold that against him, which, you know, you really shouldn't. He's 93 years old, but I'm like, come on, man. That would have been cool. That would have been really cool.
I think this is happening. This looks French, so I don't know what it says, but it says Leonardo DiCaprio interesse a Timothy Leary cinema. is this are the French leaking this? Like, what's going on?
Huh.
There might be a Timothy Leary movie in the works.
Leonardo DiCaprio to develop film on Timothy Leary.
Weird.
You know, Leonardo DiCaprio was raised by hippies and was probably tripping really young. But if he wasn't, he was around people who were. His dad, sure. His dad ran an underground comic book publishing company in San Francisco.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. It's happening, and you discovered it from Google Images.
I just searched for Timothy Leary in Google Images.
I like this one. Trip on this. DiCaprio as Timothy Leary, maybe.
Awesome. Right. I would watch that.
We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market. This trip to the market.
Listening
to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow worms.
I know some things I don't know.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
L'estato sperimentato.
I don't know
if I'm saying
that. The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Squisclar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Michael W. Dean. I'm talking to Davi Barker. I think Davi and I have the dubious honor in Liberty of possibly being the most pro-legalization of drugs guys who don't do drugs or drink.
Yeah, you know, that might be true. I haven't done, unless you count caffeine, I haven't done a drug in about 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I do caffeine and nicotine constantly, but I guess a real hardliner Baptist could argue those are drugs, or a Mormon or something, but... Or just someone who likes arguments and wants to be right, like all the newly minted libertarians who write me every week and tell me I'm wrong about something because they don't get my humor. Yeah.
You know, I think that makes it our responsibility to make those arguments, though, because anybody who goes and makes a marijuana legalization argument and they themselves smoke pot, their motive will be suspect in the mind of the drug warrior.
Yeah, it should. Right? It should not be. But yeah,
it should it will not be. It will be. But if I go and I don't know, I'm never going to testify in front of anybody about drug war. But if I we're having a conversation with a drug warrior, he couldn't say, oh, you just want to smoke pot, because I don't. Right.
What do you think that in a post-government society there would be Nuremberg-style trials for drug warriors?
Yeah, and I think the sentence will be that they will have to build the roads.
Yeah, I think since a lot of them are really good at picking weeds, I think they should do that. I think they should just pick the weeds. be the gardeners.
Okay. Yeah. You know. I don't know. Is there a debt to society? Like, who is the victim? Who have they harmed?
Everybody
who's
suing them.
Everybody in these Nuremberg trials.
Everybody they put in prison. They probably would end up being the indentured servants of those people for the rest of their lives.
Well, I mean, that's what they claim to be now, right?
The servants, the public servants. Yeah, I wouldn't be putting them on a leash, but I'll bet somebody would. That doesn't sound very libertarian. I used to joke with Nima a lot about how there will be libertarian re-indoctrination camps.
Well, I mean, look, we'll just talk about the Nuremberg trials. You're talking about government criminals that were brought to justice after the fall of their regime. What were they sentenced with? Life in prison? Put to death? I mean, was there any restitution whatsoever after the Nuremberg trials? Well, then they were a failure. They didn't provide any sort of justice for the people who were harmed by the National Socialists in the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, I don't want to line them up with a firing squad. I want them to go work off their debt to, you know, put some dollar amount on the pain and suffering of people they threw in prison for nonviolent things that are not crimes and have no victims, and make them work a couple decades, you know, picking weeds in their garden.
Yeah,
make them work tying marijuana buds for sale.
I mean, I guess you would have to decentralize the thing, right? You would have to have hundreds of thousands of trials by individuals against hundreds of thousands of bureaucrats for specific offenses.
Yeah, I'm not really pushing for that, and I don't know that that'll happen. But I also think that there will come a time when police are a lot less popular than they are today, and they're getting there daily. I mean, people who still vote and still believe in government hate cops a lot these days, because more and more – everybody knows, you know, has a cousin or something who's been beat up by a cop for no reason, or had their dog shot, or had their grandmother.
Which is one bad apple.
Now explain the one bad. Good. Nice. Now we're going to get to Timothy Leary, but explain the one bad apple thing.
This is the funniest thing. When people read stories about bad cops, the constant refrain, and this is so common, it must have been taught in school, is it's just one bad apple. And what people don't realize about that expression is that the full idiom is, it takes one bad apple to spoil the cart.
It only takes one bad apple.
It only takes one bad apple to spoil the cart. So if you're admitting there is this one bad apple, you're sort of admitting that the cart, that we're dealing with a spoiled cart here, right? So,
and that's actually a reference to worms.
Because worms.
You know, a worm eating an apple will multiply and infect the apples around it with other worms.
And infect the adjacent apples first, and more quickly than they would rot on their own.
Yeah. So You know, there's a lot of things that people say defending the state that people who've never met each other all give the same answer. You know, roads. There's a whole bunch of them. And
must be learned somehow. I've been wondering this for years. Like, why does everyone say the same thing?
Because they teach it in school, you know, because school is the catechism classes for the God of the state.
Yeah.
Where you learn to
I don't remember them ever saying just one bad apple in school, but maybe
I went to school I went to school in the 70s, and I do remember hearing the roads thing, you know, and I don't even think it was a thing of, you know, I don't think anyone was even asking the question, without the government, who would build the roads? I think it was more like, and the government provides you with roads and defense and other things. Yeah,
and you know, there's also like the story of how governments come to being. Everything, I mean, here's the thing. Schools are run by the government. There might be a conflict of interest when it comes to teaching kids about the government.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm pretty resentful about the things I was lied to in school. But I think it's more than that, because there are new ones all the time, and there are adults that are too old. They're older than the talking points that I'm hearing to have heard them in school. They must have heard them from the news or heard them from somewhere. I don't know.
Cass Sunstein writes them in his office, and then they get disseminated out to teachers somehow.
Maybe.
You know who he is?
No, not really.
He's like the czar of everything, or he was. Czar of
everything. Is he elected or appointed?
He's appointed. He was appointed by Bush. Both Bush and Obama liked him. He's basically, he wrote a book called Nudge.
Is that not a euphemism? Is he actually one of the czars that America has now?
Yeah, he was, but he's stepped down because he's grooming to be appointed for the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Yeah, the czar of everything. He wrote a book called Nudge, which is about, instead of outlawing everything, just kind of make it nudge people towards proper behavior. And, you know,
that's like Operation Choke Point, right? It's like, we're going to criminalize these industries. We're just going to put some hurdles in your way. We're going to craft society. We're not going to impose it or whatever.
Man,
we're going to mold it in our image.
He has a scary background. Constitutional law, administrative law, environmental law, and behavioral economics. Ugh.
Weird.
Behavioral economics. Yeah, and the book is called Nudge, which is really funny to me because it's spelled the same and pronounced almost the same as Nudge, which is a Yiddish term for somebody who's a busybody and always in someone else's business. Nudge by Cass Sunstein. And he is Jewish, so, you know, he would know Yiddish.
Maybe he knows that. Maybe it's intentional.
Nudge. Yeah, he wants to, you know, he was the nudge czar.
I've never heard that term. When they first started appointing czars, they had a car czar. I don't know if you remember this.
Car czar.
There was actually an intellectual property dispute because there was a guy who had a radio show about cars, and he called himself the car czar. And so when they first started doing this like cash for clunkers thing and they appointed a car czar, this guy was like, hey, you can't take my name.
That's funny. You know,
I think they actually gave him a cease and desist. I don't think he was the one claiming the intellectual property.
Yeah. You know, one of the unintended consequences of increasing government meddling with everything. You know, I kind of like the idea of computers being used in cars to help make them safer. Although, okay. I don't know. I still like the idea that, you know, a 66 Plymouth Barracuda is going to run after the bomb is dropped and the EPM knocks out all the electronics. But, you know, one of the unintended consequences of that, other than that they're going to probably put a kill switch in every car if they haven't already, or tracking devices, is that technically new cars, like brand new, like the last year and the year before, have so many embedded computers in them that selling them privately to a second party violates the software laws. Like that you click by putting the key in it. You click agree basically.
Weird.
Yeah.
So our cars are going to have these long terms of service things like
like XP, like, yeah, after 10 years, they just won't update them anymore.
You'll be driving and then suddenly your like windshield will go blue with little white text and the blue screen of death will literally be the blue screen of death.
Yeah. Cass Sunstein said in his book, Democracy and the Problem of Free Speech. Can I just stop there? He wrote a book called Democracy and the Problem of Free Speech. He says that we need to reformulate the First Amendment.
People can't talk about who they're voting for. They have to just have to vote. It'd be better if they went in and they just rolled dice.
Yeah. Well, he also wrote a white paper that was publicly available on some corner of some government website talking about suggestions for dealing with conspiracy theories on the internet. You know, basically theories that basically people exposing the government.
We can't allow people to theorize about conspiracies anymore? Yeah,
and well, to me, government is a conspiracy theory because everything they do is a conspiracy against the people. But that aside, I mean, he basically laid out a groundwork about 5 years ago for having government-paid employees who secretly sit around on the computer all day on social networks and give arguing opinions and arguments when people say bad things about the government. So when you're wasting time, you, Davi, and you listeners are wasting time on Facebook arguing, trying to convince people, there's a good chance you're arguing with a paid government employee who's never going to relent or change their mind because it's their job.
Yeah, that seems like it's a trend now. I remember reading a story that there were that the Israeli government was hiring people to go into forum chat rooms and argue pro-Israel thing every issue, every time in the comments section of articles.
Even if they were about like the electronics in new Ford cars.
Yeah, just whatever. It didn't matter. They were paid to chat, and that was easily 5 or 6 years ago. And since then, I've seen probably at least a half a dozen stories about different bureaucrats hired to comment about different things in social media.
I wonder if they have bots for it now.
I accuse them of being robots. When I start suspecting that I'm talking to a person who is defending their position like they defend their mother, I accuse them of being a robot and ask them to prove to me that they're not.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of maybe if they have a robot, they have a person who the keyword robot they have a person walking around looking at all the computers who jumps on and
someone said robot, commandeer that computer.
Passes the Turing test for you. Yeah. Cass Sunstein also poisoned the word libertarian. If you search the word libertarian podcast on iTunes, the first thing that comes up is a series by Cass Sunstein on what he called libertarian paternalism, which is his term for nudging people through the government to proper behavior, like not smoking and not eating meat and
weird.
Not owning a bigger house than you need and things like that. Yeah, man.
Why does he call it libertarian? Is it because he doesn't – like how do I control your life without threatening you? Is that what he means?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's so weird. Like, what kind of a human mind comes up with that? I mean, like, it's seriously like these people's brains operate differently.
A guy with a PhD in behavioral economics. That's who works for Obama and Bush.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's like they have a different operating system in their brain. It's like the language doesn't mean the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's so a disease, square. Man. It's a disease.
It is so square, man. Yep.
In the service, except for guns and weed.
And we're out.
They do sell the DVD.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out CreamyRadioAudio.com. That's CreamyRadioAudio.com.
Fiends. Yep. Yep. Dig it, man. Dig it. Do you dig it, Davey Barker?
I do. I think this is one of my favorite pieces of Buffer music.
That's my band Bomb.
Bumper music.
Yeah, it's my band Bomb. That's me playing bass.
Yeah.
Playing bass. It's actually looped, you know, because, you know, a lot of singing would come in that amount of time, and we don't want singing over talking here on the Freedom Fiend, so we do.
I don't know. I could see an intro that long on a regular song. It's funny. Each of your Bomb Buffer music sounds like a different band that I was into.
Yeah, and we're probably not influenced by them. They were probably influenced by us. Which bands?
Yeah, I hear some Nirvana in there. I hear some Nine Inch Nails in there sometimes. I hear some System of a Down in there sometimes. I hear some Stabbing Westward in there sometimes.
Let's slow down. Except for Nirvana, all three of those bands you mentioned started after Bomb started.
Oh yeah, I know. And Nirvana was influenced by you anyway.
That they were influenced by us, but Kurt Cobain liked us, and you heard Chris Novoselic say that on that interview, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how Ernie, every show, he says, and I invented the Ron Paul revolution.
I saw it coming. I knew it. Yep. How did you not see it? It was a big neon flashing sign of I told you so.
Yeah. Every show I say, you know, Kurt Cobain liked my band. I have proof of it. Chris Novoselic said it. Here's the tape. I say, I did the first interview with Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy, and I talked him into doing an interview because he was shy.
You're a kingmaker.
And I say that I, you know, directed Robert Downey Jr. doing narration in my film. That's my life story right there. I mean, there's, you know, I do other stuff, but those are the things I tend to say a lot.
This is what we'll put on your tombstone.
Yeah. And speaking of being around for the ages, one of the reasons I just spent like $500 out of pocket to buy ads, radio ads, on other shows. Actually more than that. It's $1,500 total. Like I spent all the money I had to buy radio ads on other shows to get people to torrent the Freedom Fiends. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want to live forever, and I can't live forever. My body's not going to live forever, but I would like some of my media to live forever. And here's the thing. People do tend to become more popular after they're dead, probably because it becomes easier to exploit them. You don't have to ask their permission, especially if the stuff is Creative Commons like mine is. You know, people can use all my stuff and make all sorts of weird remixes of it without my permission, especially after I'm dead.
Well, I think it's also because what we're doing is we're reaching into the future and trying to drag it back to the present.
Yeah.
And so by the time, you know, the world catches up with us a little bit, they'll be like, hey, wait a minute. There's some pretty good ideas here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's just you and I or just the Freedom Fiends. But I do believe that in 50 years, people are going to be listening to podcasts and radio shows from now, you know, the same way that people go back and read, you know, listen to speeches by Martin Luther King or JFK or Reagan or Mises.
Not if iTunes has anything to do with it.
Well, that's why I want to torrent it, because with the existing technology right now, you know, and I've checked it all out, I really believe that the best way to ensure longevity with self-published stuff is to give it away freely, Creative Commons license, so anyone can do anything with it on the torrents. And I'm doing something that I don't know of any other shows that are – I do know a few shows putting this stuff up on torrents. Stefan Molyneux puts this stuff up on torrents. But
yeah,
nobody is doing what I'm doing with an RSS feed. It's not the Fiend's RSS feed. There's a separate RSS feed. If you go to the Freedom Fiend site and click on the link that says Torrent Club over on the right, there's simple instructions on how to do this. You can set up your computer to run while you're asleep or at work and not using it. And – seed our stuff. Now, the way people invented, you know, added RSS feeds to some torrent computers, basically to make it easier to pirate serial things like TV things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're really into Mad Men, you know, the next episode, as soon as it's up, it'll download it automatically. But I don't know of anyone who's doing it with their own stuff, let alone a radio show, let alone.
Have I ever told you about how I did this at Burning Man?
No. Oh yeah, so yeah, check- yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me finish this, and then you can tell that.
Yeah,
it's
go ahead.
Good story. Timothy Leary, a friend of mine, is making a documentary about Timothy Leary, and he has written permission from Timothy Leary's estate, and he's running into this huge problem A lot of stuff is lost. A lot of correspondence, recordings, videos, etc. are lost. And then a bunch of the really prime ones are not lost, but they're owned by the New York Public Library. Because Leary died in 96 before the World Wide Web was very popular. It existed and he was on it, but it really wasn't what it is now. There wasn't torrenting. And, you know, if he died about 3 years later, I think everything he had would have been digitized and, you know, released Creative Commons, and it would all, there'd be thousands of copies of everything, and there'd be 1,000 Timothy Leary documentaries, and, you know, 10% of them would be great. But back then, if you were, you know, a man of letters, a man of history, and you wanted to preserve your stuff, you know, for hundreds of years, the solution had been donate it to a well-known public library to put in their collection. And that's what he did, and gave them the copyrights on all of it. And they're fighting the family on this stuff. It's mind-blowing.
So they're suppressing it. They're not letting them publish his stuff?
They're making it difficult to get things for the documentary. So I want to avoid that. And I want to have everything I do, you know, not every word I speak, but every radio show I do, every movie I've done, every piece of music I've done that's good is on that Freedom Fiends torrent link. And we have about 20 people seeding it automatically as soon as it goes out now. I want to get that up to 200. You know, the more
there
are.
This is what you mean by the floppy disk of redemption, right?
You got it. You got it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I say it lets you redeem your art.
Yeah, and I made that term up when floppy disks were, you know, the
only a phone call away.
And we're out. 7.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Dissolving the government, one joke at a time. That's really the way to do it.
See, this one sounds like first album Marilyn Manson to me.
This is so much before first album Marilyn Manson. Well, I don't know. Actually, I think it's a lot more smoother and melodic than the first album. You mean the first independent album?
First album, Portrait of an American Family.
That one's rough. That's before Nine Inch Nails got to producing him.
Yeah. It has that quality for me. Maybe I'm thinking second album. Maybe this is more like Beautiful People era Manson or something like that, but that's just, you know, I don't know. All my favorite bands are in Bomb.
And we were first. Yeah. We started in 86 and broke up in 93. So, yeah, man, it was, you know, we actually played with Nine Inch Nails in Baltimore when they were a 2-man synth duo in the lobby of a hotel for like 20 people.
That's cool.
I don't even remember it. I was macking on some girl. Macking. Yep. So, I was talking about how I want to be
a floppy disk of redemption,
immortal through the blockchain. No, even before the blockchain, through the bit torrent. And I do believe, I've never seen this proven anywhere, but I do believe that Bitcoin would not exist without BitTorrent, because BitTorrent was the first way that anyone really shared things in a decentralized way.
That's got to be where the name is from.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an homage to that was my first impression.
Yeah, and I've been an active BitTorrenter, you know, not downloading pirate stuff, but putting up my stuff since it came out, you know, for, you know, 6 or 7 years now. And yeah, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link that says Torrent Club over on the right, and you will save me the effort of having to mail you all, you know, a hard drive. And you'll help share it for other people. So tell your story about the golden floppy disk of redemption. By the way, the golden floppy disk of redemption is my joke of, you know, I grew up in the Christian church, and they always talked about the book of life. And I remember, do you ever see those things called chick pamphlets, Davi?
Yeah, Chick Comics. Yeah, absolutely.
You should make
they were great.
You should make Liberty Comics in that style.
I would love to.
I think they were an effective proselytizing method. I mean, they sold them really cheap. There were these little comic books that were like 3.5 inches wide by, or 4 inches wide by about 2.5 inches high, that had a little story in it. It was pretty well.
And they were hilarious. They were
well drawn. Yeah, they were hilarious. I mean, they were like, you know, they said things like, basically, if you smoke a joint, you'll end up getting AIDS and going to hell.
If you play Dungeons and Dragons, you're selling your soul to the devil. That was my favorite.
If you play in a rock band, you'll be gay married and then go to hell. Yeah. Yeah, they were, you know, little morality plays that were really dire, but
for two people on an airplane, one person believes they'll be saved by their deeds but not their faith, and the other person believes they'll be saved by their faith but not their deeds. Which one do you think goes in hell when the plane crashes?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there was a store in San Francisco that sold those exclusively. That's what the store sold. And most of them were in Spanish, but they had them all in English too. It was in the Mission neighborhood. And I used to go in there when I was a junkie and on a major label, you know, when I had a bunch of money before the money ran out, I would go in there and buy like 500 of those. And then I had this thing that I loved to do on tour, which was I brought a suit with me. I bought 500 of, they had one about the evils of rock and roll, basically that said all rock music is of the devil. And I would put on a suit and where whatever club we were playing in on tour, I would go stand in front of the club and denounce rock and roll and wave these pamphlets and hand them out and then go in and play with my band, play our cool devil music.
That's awesome.
It was pretty fun. I did that for most of one tour. And it was, you know, we were playing a lot of towns we'd never been, so people didn't recognize me. And it wasn't, you know, there wasn't the internet back then, so you didn't know what every band looked like. So you,
I've always wanted to organize a First Amendment protest so we could claim victory when we were shut down.
I think you should organize a First Amendment protest against yourself. I'm into things like that. Like I was influenced. I read the book Steal This Book when I was 11, which is by Abbie Hoffman. And it's about, I mean, it's got some violent stuff in it, and it's communist too, but it's basically about getting rid of the government. And, you know, he has a lot of valid complaints. It's very anti-war. It's pro-legalization of drugs. He just wanted to make everyone be communist and was willing to do violent things to do it. But he also had a sense of humor, which I really dug. Like, he did something on that book that I've done on a lot of books that I've put out since, which is on the back cover, there's a bunch of blurbs, but instead of blurbs saying how great the book is, it's blurbs from publishers who rejected it, saying things like, this book will end free speech as we know it.
Yeah.
And he went to the New York Stock Exchange with money and threw it out over the balcony on the crowd and like stopped the trading. Like people just scrambled for the money. And they were yelling, yeah, that's what it's all about. You just care about that. You know,
I've got one of those on my website. I've got it from L. Neil Smith. He's, a libertarian author. And he said that I was a pimple and that I should be completely ignored. And so I put it on my website.
Was that a copyright issue?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. He's, you know, on the Shire Church site, do you know about his beef with the Shire Church?
Yeah, that's my fault. I'm the one who wrote, I didn't write the words of the Shire Declaration, but I'm the one who did the calligraphy. And so I was the first person with a photograph of the Shire Society Declaration. And so I posted it online. And so even though I had nothing to do with appropriating the language, I'm the subject of his ire about it.
I looked at that recently on the ShireSociety.com/history page. It says, they finally, like, he demanded credit for it, so they gave him credit, and it says, and I think, did you write this or did Ian write this? It says, the declaration was originally inspired by grumpy old sci-fi author L. Neil Smith's essay, A New Covenant. Grumpy, no, old,
like Ian.
Grumpy old sci-fi writer.
That's right. No, awesome. On my website, look, can I just read this to you?
Yeah,
it says,
yeah.
Davy Barker is a pimple, a self-confessed intellectual property thief, a nasty, petty little insect born to be ignored. Why any of you are taking his opinion seriously is an utter mystery to me. He possesses no discernible wisdom or powers of observation worth taking notice of.
That's awesome. You know,
and I put L. Neil Smith, and the title I gave him was Libertarian Typist.
I think you should put Grumpy Old Sci-Fi Author, because he's a pretty good author, actually. He's well known for it. But
I accidentally ended up reading one of his books when I visited Ernest Hancock and Phoenix, and it was all right.
Accidentally. I really like, you should put Grumpy Old Sci-Fi Author. I like him. I like him, and I like his illustrator Scott Beezer a lot.
Yeah, and, Scott Beezer is awesome.
Yeah, man, is Scott Beezer
from do a libertarian chick comic, no problem.
Yeah, Big Head Press. Yeah, there you go. Pay him in Bitcoin, man. He'll do it. Yeah, you know, if I didn't know the whole L. Neil Smith legacy and what he's like, when you read me that scathing review of you, I'd say, how much did you have to pay for that? That's pretty cool.
No, he just gave it to me for free.
Where'd he put that?
That was, I think it was a review of my book on Amazon, or no, you know, I think it was an email to Pasha Roberts. That's why this pissed me off when it happened, was because he had written to Pasha Roberts, who was my employer at the time. And I was blogging for Silver Circle, and this was sort of like, I don't know why you're employing this person. So he was really trying to hurt me, like, financially when he wrote this. But, you know, Pasha's too cool for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Grumpy old sci-fi author. I think that could fit me, man. Grumpy old talk radio host, Michael Dean.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. He's an Old Testament libertarian. That's what he is.
Yeah. Yeah. One of these, kind of like, like Gary North. Although, well, you
coined the term OG libertarian. I feel like that's sort of a sign of respect. That's like you said, that's libertarian before the internet, or libertarian before it was cool. But that's for people who are actually libertarian.
Like, yeah.
I guess maybe he is actually.
He's libertarian. You know, there are a few libertarians who are pro copyright. Another one is J. Neil Schulman.
Oh, he hates me too.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. He got a movie made, and it looks like it might actually be good. You know, okay. It's
Alongside Night is what it's called. He hates me because I wrote a nasty review of his movie.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Yeah. I saw it at the Freedom Summit, one of these Freedom conferences. And it was not as bad as I reviewed it to be. I actually wrote
the trailer was good
because of something that he said at that conference. And I think I owe him an apology. I hear a rumor he's going to be at Porkfest, and if I can run into him, I want to have a conversation with him and try and bury a hatchet. Well,
I'm going to say something right now that you'll probably agree with so strongly that you'll have to give him two apologies when you meet him. But that movie is showing at the exact same moment as DIY or Die, my anti-copyright, you know, screw the man movie I made in 2001. DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist is showing Tuesday night at Porkfest for free. Alongside Night is showing for $10, I think $10 for money in town. Like, I really think that's going to be an interesting, you know, let the free market decide. Like, how many?
No, hands down, people should go to DIY or Die. People should not pay to watch Alongside Night. I mean, I'm glad that it exists. And you know,
everyone's going to be drunk. Who's going to get in a car and drive into town and pay money to sit in a...
You know, I've made money at New Hampshire events being the sober guy who drives the bus when everyone's drunk. I mean, there's a lucrative opportunity there if somebody's willing to hire me as a driver.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. We will have a rental car, but I don't want to drive people around. I want to enjoy myself. What I may be willing to do for a piece of silver is be the designated, I'll hold your gun when you're too drunk to be carrying a gun. I'll just have a holster, like 40 holster, like
you know, it's like, you've had too much to drink, give me the car keys. Okay, now give me the pistol.
I'll be wearing like a grass skirt of pistols around my hip, like pulling my pants down. I'm actually borrowing a gun from Ben Stone's wife because I don't want to travel with one. I'm borrowing a pink revolver.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll be the guy. Yeah, I'll be at Porkfest. The guy with the I'll be the only guy there with a pink revolver, probably.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't recall ever seeing a pink revolver before.
I'll probably be the only male with a pink revolver there. I think Derek J would do one if he could, but I think he's still legally barred from carrying a gun. Or yeah, he doesn't know. It's a weird gray area now. Are there laws at Porkfest, though?
Are there laws at Porkfest? There are customs at Porkfest.
Oh, yeah. So talk about customs. Now, here's the interesting thing. All libertarians, you know, all day long, we say, well, we don't need government. Everything would be enforced by contracts. I talked to Daniel from BitShares today, interviewed him, and he is building a post-contract world, and he is a straight-up ANCAP. It's kind of interesting, you know, because it's like, think about it. Like, there's libertarians. There are libertarians who are gold bugs. You know, some of these guys over 60 who are like, gold is the only way to go. And you and I like gold. We like silver. We trade with silver. But we're really into Bitcoin, too. And a lot of these old guys hate Bitcoin. They're just too old to grok the new idea. you know, the other new currency that's not government controlled. And I kind of feel that way about some of these copyright libertarians. You know, it's just they're clinging to the old ways.
Yeah. They just haven't seen the new business model,
which is everything's free and everyone gets rich. Sort of.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Have you ever wanted to move to the land of LibPair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is LibPair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to
torrent Fiends archives.
Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent
link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent link
and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Yeah. It's Freedom Fiends. Last segment. I'm really I'm PO'd at Obama. How about you?
I'm POW'd at Obama.
Yeah, I just it's not really an FCC regulation, but I feel like it's part of the mores of talk radio that
it's a custom, if you will.
It's a custom. You have to complain about Obama or they kick you off talk radio. So we did that. We got our quota in. Talk about customs a bit.
Yeah, so there's this idea, and anthropologists trace this back to biblical Israel, actually, and they call it a kritarchy, credo being Greek for justice. And it's the idea that the only source of law is the decision of an arbiter in a dispute. And the way that an arbiter should settle a dispute is by observing the customs of the culture he's living in. And there are lots of
laws. Yeah, but then that means that I'd be stoned to death for eating a Leviticus burger.
Well, if that was the prevailing culture around you, maybe, but probably not in this culture. But the idea is that the most powerful laws or the most powerful sort of organizing structure in society is actually customs. For example, there's no law that says you have to wait in line. Waiting in line is just something that we naturally sort of emerges from our culture, right? And people do it naturally, and they even ostracize people over it.
Oh, and they should, and I believe they would in LibPair or Libertarian Paradise.
Right. So that pressure of the emergence of customs can actually take over most of the organizing of society. There's lots of examples of it.
Most of the time, there's no cop around and people rely on customs.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you start looking for it, you'll see how completely prevalent it is. And the thing is that a statutory legal system is powerless without a customary legal system. If we didn't have the social pressure of people thinking that laws govern society and the social pressure of people like freaking out when you propose intentionally breaking a law, if it was not a custom to obey statutes, statutory law would fail.
How's your honey badger badge coming?
I'm still waiting for the right idea. I've toyed with the idea or the design a little bit, but I've honestly ordered a lot of new designs for Porkfest, so it'll have to be in the next wave of designs.
Yeah,
I need to figure out the right reason to turn it over. You know what I mean?
Well, you could also experiment with the idea and see how it sells by making it a button instead of a badge. They're a lot cheaper.
Making it a button. Oh, like a Krizzles button. Yeah, that's a good idea. I could get Krizzles buttons done by Porkfest and hand them out and just like see what people do with them.
Yeah, and he'll do a pretty low order of them too. But I can help you. I'll help you write the copy, the custom. I'll help you put the custom into words since we came up with it together.
Sure.
Yeah, man. I think a honey badger is better than a porcupine. I know a porcupine has a meaning in your book, but everyone's going to think it's
turn it over whenever you do what you want.
Yeah. You know, a porcupine, everyone's going to think it's, you know, and not necessarily all of the people in the Free State Project believe it's a good thing to break nanny laws. And yeah. I do think that there it'd be good if there were a secondary. What we're talking about is on a previous show, if you didn't hear it, is when I was a Cub Scout, they had a thing called the Bobcat badge.
Bobcat,
you know, it was a
badge.
Little pin with a Bobcat's face on it. And basically, you get it when you become a scout. Like, you don't have to do anything but show up to get it. It's the first badge you get. They don't have it anymore. They have a Bobcat, like, so-on merit badge kind of thing. But, you know, they had this little badge, and this wasn't part of the canon, the written canon of the Boy Scouts. It was a custom that you were supposed to put it on upside down when you put your uniform on in the morning, and you couldn't turn it right side up until you did a good deed for a stranger. So Davi and I came up with the idea of you don't turn it over until you've broken a nanny law. And I think that there should be a secondary thing, too, for people that don't want to break laws. Like, maybe you speak liberty to somebody who isn't familiar with it, you know.
Well, the thing with Honey Badger, I mean, Honey Badger don't give an S is the slogan of the Honey Badger meme. So it seems like if you were going to do a Honey Badger badge, it would have to be like you flip it over when you do something out of reckless disregard for what anybody else thinks.
Yeah. And honey badgers are bad. They're violent, too. I don't know if it's the best animal to use. Maybe it
no, they're
be
not
an
a non-aggression principle animal.
Maybe it should be a stop sign and under it says no. Or you ever seen that thing that somebody wrote anarchy, you know,
spread anarchy. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Someone wrote underneath it. That'd be a good badge. Yeah. All right, man. It's been a really good show with you, Davi Barker of shinybadges.com.
Absolutely.
You're responsible for that horrible jingle that just roots into my brain like a worm in an apple and infects
worms.
Everything inside me. Worms.
After dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.